And at 29 minutes after the hour, just a tad late here to welcome Robbie into the fold, we have the Gleason threesome here. Sharon is with us, David Allen Punt, and now from Ashburn, Virginia, Pastor Robbie Pruitt. Robbie's an Anglican pastor, a member of the board, but not just a member. Robbie is the executive director of Preserving Bible Times, and I know the board is grateful that you are. Robbie, you and I just had 3 days together in Nashville. What a time that was. Yeah.
Good to be with you guys. What a treat on a Friday to be with David and Sharon and you, Jim, again, after just having spent the 3 days there in Nash Vegas. And it was nice. Good to be there in that Airbnb. David, we had a movie theater in our Airbnb.
Really?
Yeah, of course. Really?
I'm amazed that you've spent 3 days together and you're still speaking. It's like taking a vacation with your spouse. Sometimes you need another vacation.
Yeah, Robbie and I shared quarters in an Airbnb that was ostensibly close to the church where this conference was. And we were going to hoof it to the church. But, I mean, outside it's 90 degrees and about 80% humidity. And we figured, what should we? Well, we got the rest of the Preserving Bible Times board was there. And drove us all over the place, picked us up and put us back and took us out to eat. And it was just a wonderful time. But mainly, I got to tell you, John has been a special topic for me ever since I became a Christ follower. And I thought I had him figured out. So we spent these 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, and well, half day Wednesday, focused on John the Apostle and all of his writings and all of his, the timeline was fascinating, the geography was fascinating, and it amazed, well, it didn't surprise me, but amazed me still how much more you can learn by studying the geography and the timeline of one of the apostles. What did you think, Robbie?
Yeah, and to take all of John's works and looking at them at one time. So the Gospel of John, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, letters of John, and Revelation, singular. And so those five books together, to study them as a whole, is quite fascinating. And I would compare that. I know we've been talking about the Gospel of Luke here in the mornings lately. I would compare that as studying Luke, Acts together as one work as they were intended to be. Mm-hmm. So I think that you can see these themes cross over from the Gospel of John, the letters of John, and into Revelation, themes of light and darkness and life. All of these themes coupled together and in reading them in stereo in all five works. So what a treat for 3 straight days to immerse oneself in 5 books of the Bible.
There was one question I didn't get to ask, though, about John, and this is still nagging at me. Did John understand his relationship with Jesus to be substantially different in nature from that of the other apostles? Because his writings indicates that is so. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely, especially at the end of John's Gospel in chapter 21, where it's this dialogue between Peter and Jesus and John about the last time. So you see this, and it's pretty much mapped out pretty well in John's Gospel, where, you know, Peter is concerned about John. Well, what about him? Peter says, you know, because he's saying there's going to come a time, Peter, where somebody's going to lead you where you don't want to go. And then John is nearby. And of course, you know, Peter's wanting to compare his life and ministry with the Apostle John, who both of those guys ran into the tomb. John outruns Peter.
Edward was proud of it. Yeah.
Right, and all of these little details, these little nuggets of this relationship. But here in John 21 is John, the beloved disciple, who leaned in on Jesus' breast at the Last Supper. And you see this, if I want him, referring to John, Jesus saying, if I want John to live forever, what is that to do to you? Or he says, until I come again. And actually, John does live until Jesus comes again, because when is the next time he comes? It's on the island of Patmos at the revelation of St. John.
When John had the vision,
shows back up. So really, though John does die, he's the oldest and the last of the disciples to die.
The only apostle to die a natural death, is from my studies, that's what I've seen. Yeah.
Yeah, but church tradition does say that they tried to martyr him. They tried to boil him in hot oil. But the fascination there that sometimes we could read the Bible and be like, well, wait a minute. He died. He didn't see Jesus come again. But if you think about what the revelation of Jesus is to St. John, he shows up. And if you're reading a red letter Bible, even those words to John in Revelation are red, referring to, in other words, Jesus is saying this to him. He returns and has this conversation with John. Now, whether that's supernatural or he shows up physically on the island of Patmos, how that works, I don't know.
Here's another aspect from that conversation from Peter to Jesus to John. What's it to you if I want him to live forever? I have read from other scholars that reputation adhered to John for the rest of his life, that he was going to live. He would not die. That's the way and I'm not sure when people got that, whether they read it in the book of John and then for later years believe it. But I'm thinking his disciples in Ephesus, which is where John left, spent his last several decades, came to him and said, before you die, you need to write this down. You need to write this down for posterity, for all of us. And that's when he might have written the book of John. But people forever, for years and years and years, just kind of assumed he was not going to die, which would have been a tough thing to live with as the focus of a church and a church group in Western Turkey. Yeah.
Absolutely. And if you look at the text, and the verse here is John chapter 21, starting at verse 22, Jesus said to him, if it is my will that he remain until I come. So that can kind of imply living forever. But we have the benefit in the 21st century of you know, they say hindsight's 20/20. We see this clearly that he does die, but then Jesus does show up to St. John on the island of Patmos, and John writes Revelation. So he does live until Jesus comes. That's how I read it. I'm comfortable with that understanding.
Yeah, and it's worded slightly different in different translations, but that's the whole idea. And if that reputation stuck with him, that's an awesome thing to live with. And he lived up to his task. What he did was astounding, and it was made apparent to us in this survey. By the way, they're going to repeat that conference in Denver next week. I'm not sure if you can still sign up for that, unless it's to watch it online. You can do that. And then at some future date, a few months from now, the whole thing will be available streaming. So I would recommend that to anybody who has a love for John and a thirst to know more. Infusion Bible Conference, right now there's a link to it on the Preserving Bible Times site. It's like a changing slide thing, and you can grab that with your mouse and slide it to the conference, click on it, it'll take you to their site, and you can see how and when you might be able to see that thing. But I'd certainly recommend it to you. Powerful, powerful thing. Luke, Robbie, you've been taking us through Luke for 4, 5, 6 weeks, and we're not done yet. That's because there's so much depth there. Where are we going today?
Yeah, before you get into Luke, can I blurt in a question?
No.
No, okay. Oh, never mind.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay. No.
Never mind. Okay, never mind. All right. I'll just turn my mic off. Just sit here and be quiet. All right. I'm sorry.
We want to hear from you, David. Come on.
Yeah.
Well, what's the question?
That's what they say now.
What's on your mind?
I remember, and then this is maybe a couple of months ago, maybe a year ago, that there was some discussion among academics that were questioning that maybe possibly some of the books identified as John's writing weren't really written by John because of a stylistic difference or a stylistic difference in the way that the passages were written. One of the phrases was when he says, about himself, John, whom Jesus loved, and the commentator said that seems to be out of character for John to talk about himself in the third person like that.
Yeah, I have heard that, and with many of the gospel narratives, there is some ambiguity about who indeed writes it, or if there is an author who is writing on behalf of one of the disciples. So there is some level of debate. I actually see this as an identifier for John, but it's almost there's some humility. It seems like some hubris there. I'm the disciple whom Jesus loved, but at the same time, there seems like there's some humility there in that he never mentions himself. I mean, I see Paul as one of the most prideful writers. I wrote Hebrews, because as brilliant as that book is, I know he'd put his name on it. He put his name on everything else.
Well, Dave, I think that impression comes to you from Gary Burge, who we talked to at a previous conference, and he's built his whole career around the study of the Apostle John. And it was his opinion, and he stated it rather firmly, that he was convinced that John's disciples finished the book. It doesn't appear until halfway through the book of John that he's the disciple whom Jesus loved. And that this was their way of paying tribute, homage to their rabbi, to John the Apostle. The question of style, though, I always question, because these writings could have happened over the course of 60 years. And a man changes and grows and writes in different circumstances, and if there's some difference in style, I can overlook that really easily.
Yeah.
Did anybody else in the conference bring it up?
You know, the authorship was not, I mean, it was assumed from the beginning of the conference. One of the things that they said is, we're going upon the working assumption that John has written all of these books. Now, we know there's debate over it, but this is the assumption that we are going on, and it's my assumption. I believe that John wrote all five of these works. I mean, the same thing with Moses in Deuteronomy. We know he didn't write the end, because if he did, he's burying himself at his death. And you know, dead people don't write books. So we know someone finished Deuteronomy. So I'm also okay with one of the disciples or someone who is a follower of Jesus after John's death, I should say, because John is the last disciple to die. If they finish it or edit it or clean it up, I'm okay with that as well.
Yeah, I don't see conflict in that. I don't see any reason to doubt what you read because of that. Knowing how that happened, what the ambience is for a disciple to continue the work of the rabbi, to me, there's little room for error in there.
Yeah, I'm not puzzled by it. I'm not challenged by it. I'm just curious if other academics got involved in it. And John Berge wasn't there, apparently.
No, Gary, no, he was not.
Gary Berge.
He teaches in Illinois at one of the big religious institutions. I've forgotten which one, but man, he's got many books on this. If anybody's interested, to follow that up, all of his books are on Amazon. You can go there and look up Gary. It's B-U-R-G-E, I believe, is the way he spells his name.
Yeah, and I highly recommend
it. Wheaton?
I think it is Wheaton.
Wheaton College?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Chicago then, right?
Yeah, right.
So I highly recommend also biblicaltraining.org has many of Gary's lectures for free, college-level lectures for free, biblicaltraining.org. Wonderful website and resource to study the Gospel of John, as well as all the other books. And one of the retreat speakers, Cindy Parker, has a biblical geography class there. As well, which is phenomenal.
Don't tell David that Cindy Parker was there. He's going to regret that he didn't come.
Oh, no.
David, I got to tell you, she was just as sensational in this conference. Yeah, she was. Oh, the Lady Geography herself. And that just lit things up because she got into the geography again of Western Turkey. And it explains things that Jesus said and did in the book of John. Knowing where John had his ministry and the audience he was writing to. I mean, those are important factors in understanding what he put in his book and why, and how he was attacking certain cults that were messing with his churches back there. And those would have been recognized. I'm thinking particularly of the bread discourse of Jesus, where this is my body, you could eat my body and drink my blood, and it offended people there, and now I know why. Because it had to do with the cult of Dionysius in Turkey.
A small diversion.
Mm-hmm.
In your absence, I've been driving around the countryside, doing work and spreading the word and
aimlessly
and
wandering.
Making money and listening to books on tape. I'm listening to a Daniel Silva book, which was one of Doug's favorite authors, and the particular book that I'm reading or listening to takes place in Syria, and they're describing the temple at Palmyra before it was ruined, and then after it was ruined by ISIS, and it's interesting to hear the description of the geography from Daniel Silva and how it relates to, or how it's very similar to, what was her name again?
Cindy Parker.
Cindy.
Dr. Cindy Parker. Yeah.
Dr. Parker, and it's very very similar in the style that she uses to describe the geography of the area.
By the way, her teaching is widely available on the internet too. Robbie knows a couple of those sites were, but geography is just such a key to understanding the Bible. That's why a trip there is so enlightening, and so many people go there and come back and say, my life has changed. My life has changed now that I've seen this, where this happened. And so we encourage people, if you can make it, if you can't, though, you can get a huge feeling of what the Holy Land is like. A couple ways. One, this Infusion Bible Conference, or you can visit Preserving Bible Times. And there is some streaming video, the Bible, its land and culture, or the Bible and the land. And you see helicopter overflights of the Holy Land that are narrated. So you can see what it's like now, and they explain what it was like then. I mean, it's an amazing thing to tour. It's almost like you're there.
So, if I make it through the trip to the Ark and Italy and Mexico in the spring, Jerusalem is on the list.
Well, I know somebody you can go with, David.
One of the pastors
I'm connected with is doing a study tour in January, so I can connect you with that. And Cindy Parker, having Cindy Parker at the Infusion Bible Conference, kind of like having Sharon Burgess on the Broken Road Radio, liven it up.
I thought you were going to say the token woman.
No, Sharon, how are you?
Doing fairly well. I'm just drinking this all in when we're talking. This is not related to Luke, but it's kind of related to what Dave and Jim are both saying. It's like American history. It's one thing to read it in a book, but if you go to Williamsburg and walk the streets and understand the culture of the milliner and the bakers and
there's a carpentry shop there too, which is pretty phenomenal. So,
all of that. Or if you go to Philadelphia, and as a kid, I grew up and I have a greater appreciation of American history. And it's the same way our pastor takes tours. Pretty much he alternates years. So one year he'll go to Israel and work with a group there. And another year he'll do the Reformation and he'll go to Europe. And they're getting ready for another tour. So it's different. It's kind of like blessed are those who have not seen and yet believed.
Yeah.
It's the same type thing, but it just really enriches when you can get that hands-on experience, when it's multi-sensory.
Well, that's the whole point of context. It makes the Bible tangible. You see it in full color, in 3D. We're fond of saying you can read between the lines what's there. And but there's still some problems. I mean, it's hard to study this stuff on your own. And you need to be active and searching to get this context. It's hard. Preserving Bible Times is just one source of many, but it's a great one. And again, that's preservingbibletimes.org. You can link to it from Broken Road. So Luke is dealing with
division. It's one of the most complicated sayings of Jesus, where he says, "I came to cast fire on earth, and would that it already be kindled." And Jesus talks about a baptism that he has to be baptized with, and he talks about the division that he's going to bring. I mean, all of us have experienced agreeing to disagree with someone, or conflict, or where your ideas or personalities don't match up, value systems don't match. I guess I don't have to explain that too much in a post-pandemic world with the political, racial tensions and the isolation, the division in our culture and society. Well, coming to know Jesus will do that too, because when you align yourself with Christ, there's a natural division and separation and focus of your values. So we're in Luke chapter 12, starting at verse 49, where Jesus says this, and it's kind of hard to believe that Jesus says, I don't come to bring peace, but a sword. What do you do with that statement, and what does he mean by it, is a good question. Well, we see this in the life of, in the calling of John. When John is called with James, his brother, James and John, two brothers, as two of the 12 disciples, John, the youngest disciple, the beloved disciple, and you see this tension even between the disciples and who's greater. They're jockeying for position and power. And even James and John's mother approached Jesus in Matthew's gospel, and she asked in chapter 20, verse 20, Lord, grant that one of these my sons sit at your right hand and your left in your kingdom. I mean, that's a power play. Come on, Mom.
What a pushy
don't
lady.
Don't make us look bad in front of all of our friends, but, you know, Jesus has some real things to say, and he has it to say at the end of John's gospel. We just talked about that between John and Peter, where Peter's concerned about his fate versus John's fate. And Jesus has a purpose and plan for all of our lives. And what do they say? There's no win in comparison. And we've got to play the role of us because everybody else is taken. And so what does it look like when we live out our faith in this world with this idea that we are going to live countercultural no matter where we are, because Jesus's kingdom is of another world. We're following a king of another kingdom. Therefore, we're like aliens, pilgrims, strangers in a strange land. And the way that we navigate this world and this life with different value systems and different governing is going to put us at odds with people.
That's the whole idea of a sojourn, that is, the traveling in a land not your own, where, you know, we're in the world but not of it as a Christ follower.
That's right. So Jesus talks about how this is going to happen. One of the interesting contextual pieces is he says that daughter-in-law and mother-in-law will be against each other, but it never says son-in-law and mother-in-law, because the woman would move into this to the husband's home. And so there is this one-tracked tension between the blending of families, and that's this wife coming into her husband's household, and there she's living with her mother-in-law. So when you have these tensions, even in the household, with people believing different things as people come to know Jesus, he's saying that he's bringing in his kingdom and that there is going to be tensions. And he's saying that he is coming again and that we must be ready. And he has just said, be ready. And he tells this parable, being dressed for action of the bridegroom coming, that we talked about last week. Mm-hmm. But now he gives this beautiful geographical piece. We were just talking about going to the land. And he says, Jesus, being the he here, says, he says to the crowds, when you see a cloud rising in the west, you say at once, the rain is coming. And it happens. And when you see the south wind blowing, you say, there will be scorching heat. And that happens. You hypocrites, you know how to interpret the appearance of the earth and sky, but you do not know how to interpret the present time. And he's talking about the times we're in, where the Messiah has come and he will come again. Hmm. So this is rooted in geography. Now, I don't know what happens in your neighborhood when the west wind blows, but in Israel, in the west is the Mediterranean Sea. So every time the west wind blows, it's bringing in moisture, and of course it's going to rain. And then in the southeast is desert. It's dry, arid land. And the heat of the desert blows in with the south winds, and it scorches crops and brings heat and brings drought and brings this intensity. And everybody knows that because they know where they are on the map. It's kind of like when you go into the mall, you see the little red dot on the map. It says, you are here.
Well, these were also agrarian people. They were rooted in the ground and the seasons, and they were acutely aware of all that stuff. So this made sense to them coming from Jesus. They tracked with him perfectly, I suspect.
Yeah. And so the spiritual principle here is we all understand earthly realities, geographical realities. We know where we are on the face of the planet. And these days with cell phones, we know that even more. Mm-hmm. Really within you know, a foot. We know exactly where we are on the map, and our Uber driver can get us there. You know,
well, I was pretty impressed with that Uber driver taking me home the other day. He had this little oversized cell phone there, and he would reach over and enlarge it or shrink, and he knew exactly where we were, what off ramp to take. And I just wished I could speak with him, because there was this language barrier, you know, and I couldn't.
So now apply that.
What would you say? What would you? I'm tired. I want to go home.
I don't know. I looked at him and said, I-35, and I got this blank stare back. And we're in trouble here.
Well, folks, just like we are to know where we are on the map, Jesus is telling us we should know where we are spiritually.
I think that's an excellent
absolutely
idea. Yeah, yeah. And Robbie, again, Executive Director of Preserving Bible Times, and I think he'll vouch for me when I say this is a website you need to get to know. There's books there and DVDs, but all that's being converted to streaming, which means you can go there and there's free stuff and there's stuff for purchase, but you can obtain it almost instantly and watch it right on your laptop, your cell phone, your computer. It's all being, and there's a lot there right now that is streaming. It's a good place to be, preservingbibletimes.org. Robbie, thanks so much. We'll see you again next week, I trust.
Indeed.
I know your schedule, so I better ask.
I'll be there Thursday.
Well, Thursday. Back on regular Thursdays. Okay.
Unless Sharon's here on Friday, we might have to shift this up. I like hanging out.
We'll have to get those sump pumps running in your basement.
Yeah, Robbie's church
basement.
Church had a flood while he was gone. He's got his hands full now. So
church building.
No, church building. That's right. True.
He did clarify that for
people
us.
Are
a big,
fine.
Big difference. Robbie, take care. Thanks so much. Blessings to you.
Godspeed, folks. Thanks for having me on.
See you, Robbie.